December. Okay.
That's a good word.
Is she on now? Is she on?
Looks like.
I'm on.
Hey, good morning, Trish.
Good morning.
All right. Well, we can now open our meeting. So.
A minute early.
So I'd like to welcome everybody to the November board meeting of the Hawaii Historic Places Review Board. We now have a quorum. Before we move to approve the agenda, I'd like to introduce all of us. So if we could begin with Grant.
Graham Hart, I'm an architect.
I'm Bill Chapman, I'm a historian and also vice chair, serving as chair.
Adrian Truluck, board member, historical landscape architect.
And Ms. Staff.
Kevin Lucky Watson. Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry, Trish.
Oh, you're fine.
I was just at the in a different zone. Now, Trish Watson.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm Mary Kadama, Shipti Architecture Branch Chief.
And I'm Brianna Schmidt with Shipti Architectural Historian.
Okay, so our first order of business is to approve the agenda, and for purposes of time and the convenience of board members, that motion should carry.
But Bill, can I recommend we take it out of order? Can we do E first?
We're doing that.
Well,
okay. I have a proposal for that.
So our first proposal is to. I'm requesting somebody to make the motion. We approve the agenda for today with moving B and C, right?
Yep.
And D. B and C. So I would like to move to approve today's agenda with the modification of moving agenda item B and C to follow D, which will then allow us to move a little faster through nominations while we maintain quorum.
Okay, so
can we also move, so kind of friendly amendment, can we move E up front? Because we need to approve E for the next meeting today. So can we move E to the top of the agenda just so we're able to hold our next meeting?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Do we need to do that?
So E is the limited meeting.
We can't do that.
And the limited meeting approval is only by 2/3. Members of the entitled members. So we don't have enough people to do a limited meeting.
So we'll strike E,
yes,
since it's not,
yeah,
possible.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll just strike that one from as part of the modifications.
Mary, did we have to approve the listings for the next meeting at this meeting?
No.
Okay. Then let's just strike E. Okay.
No, it's just for the limited meeting, Trish.
Okay.
Which we're not going to hold.
Okay.
Second the motion.
Okay. I think everybody is clear to you all, staff, what we've just proposed. So, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. So this means we will begin our nomination process with the wood tenement buildings behind Tong Fat Company owner request to delist.
She's going to delist.
Correct?
Yes. We're going to share that slide.
All right.
Okay.
So the staff will share the slide. We'll ask the owner and his representative come on, join us up here at the table, and you can explain your position. Informally, it turns out, we have always tried to say, try to limit your presentations to 3 minutes, so that it's not actually written into law. Thank you, sir.
I have a problem with my hearing. I need my son listening. The loudspeaker, I have a hard time understanding.
Yes, understood.
Okay.
So this morning, I would like to request to be on my property delisted from the historic places. It was done without my knowledge. And it was submitted back in 2020, and I discovered that it was on a list, historical list, only about a year ago when I put my then I just wanted to be listed. also, I feel that I was not notified of it being being on the list.
Yes.
And as it was done without my knowledge or my authorization. I've been paying all my taxes on a regular basis. It's been classified as commercial. And I wanted to be known to everybody that the building is 75 years old. More than that.
You don't have much time. Okay. I think that's good enough.
I think. Well, thank you for coming down. And I'm going to ask if the staff could convey a record of the notification process. And do you have a return receipt, Anna?
Okay. We can go to the next. I just wanted to, just for everybody's education, that the guidelines for delisting is shown on the slide. And it talks about the three things that could qualify a property to be delisted. The board would, they have the option of removing the property. And so in response to Bill's question, we did do a search of our records. Because it's been a while, we don't have any type of hard copy receipt that it was received for the notification of the nomination to be listed. So, but we do have a copy of the signed letter from our division chief. And typically, for most of our records, if they are assigned for these types of letters, it would go out certified mail. However, I can confirm that we do not have a copy of a letter that was sent for to notify you that the property was listed. We don't have a record of that in our administrative files.
So does any other member of the board have a question of our applicant?
So essentially of those three criteria for the removal of properties, the third one is the one that we are seeing maybe applicable here in that for failure to follow procedures, because one of the procedures is to be sure that that information is conveyed and we don't have a record that confirms that information was conveyed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would entertain a motion at this point.
I'll make a motion that the Wood Tenement Building behind Tong Fat Co. Be delisted. The State Register of Historic Places.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Trisha's second.
I do have a question for the
further owner, discussion.
So, sir, I understand, and I if you were not notified, and I believe that's true, then I will also vote to delist. But I'm curious as to your plans for the building, because they are really wonderful buildings. So I'm just wondering, had this been done properly, if listing them, whether for the tax benefits or other reasons, would be of interest to you?
So, I'm basically that correct. Would you be interested in listing it in the future?
Not at this moment, but in the future.
Yeah, okay.
Was that your question? Was your question if we wanted to list it?
If you would consider it in the future. Like, I think that's...
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities.
Excellent. Thank you. I just wanted to know that. I'm very sorry that you weren't notified properly, but they are wonderful buildings. So I do hope that's something you consider in the future.
She's asking if there may be consideration of relisting in the future. And I said... it's not out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, just to reiterate some of the things we talked about during the site visit, you would be eligible for a 50% reassessment for the whole of your property, including Tongfat, as a commercial property listed on the state register under the county regulations. You'd also be, if it were listed in the national register, you'd be eligible for a 20% tax credit for investment in the property, not a deduction, but a credit. So some people actually consider that money in the bank.
And the 50% is a tax credit for the county?
That's a tax abatement.
Tax abatement for the county is 50% annually. And if you're in the national register, it'll be a 20% credit.
If you invest in the property.
If you reinvest into the property. We can move it.
It'd be something, I just encourage you to look into this, right?
Yeah.
It could ultimately be the best step forward economically for your property, actually. There are advantages to that.
We appreciate that, Bill.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
All right, so if no further discussion, can we have a vote, please? All those in favor of delisting the property at 425 North King Street, please indicate by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, all opposed? So, thank you. Your request is granted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope
thank you for coming down. Yeah. Sorry for anxiety you soon. Created.
We hope to see you back at some point.
Thank you. You're welcome. Yeah.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah.
Just coming up with an information on the water. Thanks,
Fred. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, so we'll move on to our next property at 2035 Wilhelmina Rise, the Iwao Miyake residence.
Good morning.
Good morning, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You go ahead and identify yourself.
Yes, I was going to just do this. I'm Alfred Mitzberger. I'm representing the owners here today for the Dr. Iwao residence on the Wilhelmina Rise. And I'm an architect and author of an Alpha Prize book. Briefly, can we go to the next slide, please? Thank you. Dr. Iwao Miyake residence, now owned by the couple, Dr. Han and Wade Bannister, is located on Wilhelmina Rise. Wilhelmina Rise is a hillside area above Mauka of Diamond Head, sorry. And it is located across the park in the water reservoir. It's a downslope hillside with a relatively steep incline. The residence is two-story residence. It's a stud construction, basically. Based on CMU concrete foundation. Next slide, please. I'm going to just go through it. So here we got a bit of an overview with two abbreviated plans with the property laid out in the catastral plan and in the USGIS map. Next slide, please. Here we see an aerial photograph with the residence highlighted. You see that the residence is fairly intact in terms of its original content. There's a solar panel on the later roof that we have not identified yet, which I just basically realized as well with the photograph.
It's a creative process.
Moving forward, the residence is from 1957. Here you see the driveway. Entry area and the elevation that is facing southeast, basically. And the two-story residence, it's almost like a mirrored stack, kind of like floor plan, an L-shaped floor plan with the living room and the kitchen upstairs and two bedrooms upstairs and the bathroom as well. Stairwell leading down into the basement. Next slide, please. Just going to show a bit the entrance situation. We have a small little front porch, front yard that has been manicured, but I don't know anything about the origins of this of the landscaping in this case, whether it's original or it's been modified, partially because we are not in possession of the original block drawing set. We only have three sheets of the drawing set currently. And next slide, please. Here you see again the situation as we encountered it at the visit, and here you can see actually what has changed, because yesterday's visit revealed that now the owners have faithfully restored the lower lanai area that you see on the right-hand side, which used to have this mill guard slider inserted, and now it's back to the jalousie system that we see also above and was in the elevations itself. Next slide, please. The interior is fairly intact. I would say there is, it appears that the walls have been painted over, but the roof joists and roof rafters and the material and flooring material is all fairly original. The kitchen has been modified by previous owners. The exact date is not verifiable in any form, but the kitchen system, like the millwork, is partially still intact. Next slide, please. And you see here the living room and the kitchen, again, identified. Those photos are by Olivier Kroning and by myself. It has some intricate features above the entrance, a glass feature. In general, the kitchen showcases Alpha Price's typical kind of ribbon window in the kitchen. That is very typical for him. Next, please. The architect, I should point out, is Alpha Price. I forgot about that. Then the lanai area is here documented. The woodworking and the millwork is all original still. It's a whitewashed or bleached wood paneling, redwood paneling, I think. The flooring is apitong, which is, I've done my research now a bit better, it's a Southeast Asian, it's a Filipino hardwood, basically. And but it is mostly a commercial hardwood, so it's not like a refined one, typically. It's used for truck beds. So it shows you a bit that the residence is done with very modest means, but done very well, as we can tell from the visitation and the photographs. There's a lot of attention to the detail on the interior. Next slide, please. As you can see, the millwork is still intact that was built in. This is all very typical for Alfred Price to build in millwork in a very Viennese tradition. We have a fantastic view towards the Hunakai area here. I think, yeah, that's Hunakai right area. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. The millwork, again, is also whitewashed and shows those typical drawers that Alpha Price seem to prefer, those slanted or scalloping drawers that we sometimes see. Next slide, please. Here's some more photos. This is the lower bedroom, also with intact millwork and window work here. Next slide, please. The lanai functions as an intermediary zone. It's a very typical for Price also to open all the rooms with shochi doors to the lanai itself. Here you see the old bathroom that has been modified in the 80s, and my guess, I have to guess, it could be 70s as well. It's hard to tell. It's just not right for the house, that's for sure. The rest of the building is fairly intact. The flooring here shows the old flooring that has been replaced now with the updated matching flooring. And next slide. Let me quickly tell you a bit more about the owner. Ivao Miyake was a radiologist at the University of Hawaii, an associate professor. Here you see a photo of him with his students. Interesting enough, the woman behind him, that directly behind him, is a Tutil, which is of our next residence. The owner is some distant relative to the Tutils, I found out. The building permit listed was in 1957. And the completion was in 1958, in January 1958, or December, actually, here is posted, but it was a 56-57 residence in construction. The book is featured in Alfred Price Displays, the publication. It's part of the building list there. And next, I want to quickly go to a quick comparison. What is that? This is the Paul Leon residence, which is on the registry. And in black and white, there's a photo by Robert Wenken, and it shows you a bit the kind of kinship to the Miyake residence. And it also shows you probably how the exterior was originally toned in terms of like dark wood tone, like natural wood tone, untreated, and likely the windows lighter framed, which would be typical for Price. This one is obviously different, but you can see the kinship between those two residences, similar site problems. And as for typical for Price, we do have site orientation as a main objective in this project. The landscaping is, in our case, not really existent. There's a tree in the backyard, and the backyard is mostly lawn and has a shotcrete kind of like slope area with a non-contributing deck. Next slide, please. Quickly about Alfred Price, so we get this, and I'm going to do this for the next presentation as well, so we don't have redundancy here, but if the board permits this. Criterion B would be Alfred Price. He's an Austrian-Hawaiian architect, an emigre Jewish refugee, born on February 2nd, 1911, died on 29th of March in 1994. Next slide, please. Born in a Jewish family, grew up in Vienna in Austria. Next slide, please. And upon his arrival, he worked with Bjarne Dahl and Connie Conrad. You see them here, the three, in this one slide. And as I said, Price was a giant. As you can tell, he's like two heads taller than his colleagues in this photo. The two buildings that are prominent out of this collaboration is obviously the Jade Building, which is the central building where you see the sketch by Price and below the actual execution as it is today, and the Lewis Street apartments, which you can see there on Lewis Street on the corner of Kalakaua. Yeah, Kalakaua and Lewis. A bit in bad shape right now, but still pretty intact. Mm-hmm. Next slide, please. He was also very heavily involved with the memorial system, which was the largest urban memorial system plan that in the U.S. at the time, which basically went from Pearl Harbor to Diamond Head as a series of memorial events that was, I think, critical, and that led ultimately, next slide, please, to also some of the collaboration that Price was involved in with associated architects as Vladimir Osipov, Philip Fisk, Johnson & Perkins. And with those, he established Lapa Hoehoe Elementary and High School on the Big Island, and the now demolished Mauna Lua Mall, which was the first anchor mall on the island, actually. Next slide. This, and he's most famous for those three projects, which is the church on Beritania Street, the First United Methodist Church. This was originally also compound. The sanctuary is the only thing that's left of it. The Honolulu Zoo entrance, which just recently got restored, and the USS Arizona Memorial, which is soon undergoing some restoration. Yeah. And that leads us to his second portion of the career. Next slide, please. Where he then became a very prominent public servant. Next slide, please. Collaborating in his functions, AIA treasurer or AIA vice president or AIA president even, and also then a state coordinator, a state planning coordinator, and later as president of the State Foundation for Army Culture and Arts, SFCHA. And he was heavily involved with the memorial plan and the ward development at the time. Next slide, please. Was heavily published for his interest in preserving and supporting the local arts, as well as bringing in, obviously, artists into the public realm. He created the so-called 1% law, which supports supposed to support and maintain art for any public building investment, basically. Next slide, with 1%. And he was heavily involved also in public planning at the time, Hilo plan after the disaster was partially his development. He retired in 1980. Next slide. He was well decorated and documented as well with multiple awards. I don't want to list them all right now. But he was considered obviously a treasure of the state of Hawaii. That was one of the awards he received. Next. And he was well published and recognized by various governors. He collaborated heavily with the governor, obviously, in his various functions. and is the only civilian that was buried with flags and half-mast at the USS Arizona Memorial at the time, when he died in 1994. Next slide. Here we see actually multiple Price family member and back in the at their house. And the left top right corner is Alfred Price and his daughter underneath, and his son sits there with the white pants and loafers. And he got a honorary doctorate from the University of Hawaii and was invited guest speaker at the 50-year memorial celebration, Pearl Harbor celebration as well. This was just shortly before his death. Next slide. And here's an excerpt of the 1% law just before it went into action. So this is some of the documents out of his function as president of the SFHCA and the bill author that he was. Next slide. And then there's an official proclamation of his work as the Alfred Price and used as a Arizona Memorial Day, which is on December 30th. May 30th Memorial Day. I got my dates a bit mixed up today. Sorry about this. But yeah, that's as brief as I could do it. Sorry about that. That I went wrong.
No, you covered for several other properties today. So thank you very much, Axel. So anybody have any questions of Axel?
I know that when we did the limited visit, we there was a lot of stuff that had been being done to restore or to create more compatible things where there had been changes before. Is there any plan for future work on the exterior? I'm sure the list is very long, long term.
Well, I would need to speak for the clients, which I can't. At least, I mean, I can. But I do believe there is some plans for updating the exterior to match it probably more with the original intent. How exactly this will be done is not yet clear because it is a budget item, as you may guess.
Yeah, I was just curious about it.
No, I think we had a conversation in the past also that we would like to probably bring back the original read of the object, like as a more darker main body with more expressive like windows. I would need to defer that though to the clients and their ultimate intention. There is interest. The rest of what you saw in the visit, this is like a new refrigerator and the bathrooms have been tried to be restored faithfully. There has been some repair done on the deck and the underpinning currently. So this is all done faithfully currently with as much respect to the original intent as we can restore it.
So the owners, are they applying for both state and national register or just state listed?
That's a strategic question, right? I think it's definitely...
We need to know for purposes of the motion, I guess.
That I understand. I think I wrote in it that we're applying for both, right? From what I would suggest that we do both.
All right.
I think it's a valuable contribution to the relatively sparse catalog of famous modernist architect Alfred Price, and it's in very good shape also. I think that's what I think is compels it to be listed.
Trish, any questions?
No, I'm good. Thank you very much.
Anybody else questions?
I'll make a motion.
I would entertain a motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion. I make a motion that the Miyake residence be added to the State Register of Historic Places under Category B and C and recommended to the National Register. At the local level of importance, what are we calling that? Yeah.
Local level.
Of significance. That's the word, not importance. Anything else?
I would second.
Discussion is, do we want to, why would we use B? Because they very explicitly say work of a famous architect is actually under C.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, if he didn't live there.
Yeah.
It wasn't a strong influence on his career, then it wouldn't really be B. Yeah. It would be C. That's a good point.
You only need one.
I only need one criteria.
Yeah.
They're
very clear.
C is work of a master.
They even use Frank Lloyd Wright as an example. a Frank Lloyd Wright house is still listed under C.
Is this considered a formal edit in this case, or?
Can we let them just change that?
Yeah, we can change it as long as the board approves.
Okay.
So let's revisit the motion.
Okay. Then just under the category C, a motion that the Miyake residence be added to the State Register of Historic Places and recommended to the National Register of Historic Places with a local level of significance.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. There we go.
So any further discussion? All right. So all those in favor of listing the property at 2035 Milmina Rise under both this, on both state and recommended for the National Register. So I believe that is unanimous. So thank you very much, Axel.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this very much.
Okay. And Bill, if I may, just to everyone there, I just want to, I think the board knows, I have a hard stop at 11:30 today, so we'll lose quorum. So if everybody can sort of just keep that in mind, we are trying to get through as many nominations as
we can. We should be okay now.
Yeah.
All right. So if we could now have a presentation on 3555 Woodlawn Avenue?
Yes.
Woodlawn Drive, I'm sorry.
Again, for the record, my name is Axel Schmitzberger, architect and author of the book on Alfred Price. I'm representing the owners, Heather Reckenwald and Michael Smith. Heather Reckenwald is present here via Zoom. The Raymond Tuttle residence is a building that was begun in 1949 and completed in 1951. It's another residence by the modern master architect Alfred Price. It's located in the upper hillside of Manoa in so-called Woodlawn area, just below the Melemele area, Pedy Drive, Melemele area. It is a complex site. It has a shared covenant with another party as access road, and it has an easement of a stream actually going through the property. And next slide, please. Here you can see a floor plan, a reconstructed floor plan of the project, and how it sits on the site, as well as the catastral map acute public map. Yeah, and the shows us the location on Woodlawn. It's the residence is roughly oriented. It's an L-shaped residence. It's not a perfect L, and I'm going to get to this in a second. So next slide, please. That sits on the flat portion of a otherwise downhill slope hillside. It has some landscaping that is extant still from the original, but the author of the landscaping plans is unknown, as we don't have any plan documentation for this building except for published small little vignette plan. The residence is wood construction. It's a stud construction with an very eloquent and elaborate roof that follows the L shape. It has an outriggering kind of like deck entrance that accesses the residence as well as the carport. Next slide. Here we see a comparison between the original photo taken in 1951 by Robert Wenkem and comparable to a photo of Olivier Koning in 2021. And what happened is that the neighbors started building up actually the site with a retaining wall so they can actually have a flat portion for their pool. That is the major change on the site, actually right adjacent to it. But other than that, the building is in very original shape, probably one of the best shapes I've seen, one of the Price houses. Next slide. This is the Mauka site facing towards Manoa Valley, basically. This is the backside of the building. You see there is a built-up 4-inch CMU stem walls that are placed strategically among the in the building. There is there's a glass block wall where the bathroom is, with a clear story running across the entire building, And there's a kind of, I call it a dormer window because for the lack of better words, it's like almost like a chancel popping out of the living room that has a plate glazing, further ceiling plate glazing. Next slide, please. And here you see again a comparison between the original 1951 situation and the current situation as we encountered it also yesterday in our visit. The flooring is stained wood flooring. It looks like it's a fir wood, probably, or redwood. The walls in interior paneling is also redwood. It is fairly original. As you can see, there's only two minute changes. The mechanic ceiling was at a different tone. I'm not sure what color it was. And one of the side wall panels had wood paneling that is now painted white. But other than that, it's completely original in that. And here we see also this cantilevering desk that is part of the kitchen that is now missing. Other than that, the building is almost 100% original. Next slide. Here we can see more of this fantastic situation of this very interesting living room cockpit, almost like chancel, that has the corner butt glazed and then has some and has a trellis above that is counterintuitive to the slope of the roof. Next. Here we see the kitchen comparison, original kitchen photo from 1951 versus current kitchen. You can see that most of the kitchen is still intact. The door panels are missing now and the color has changed. But other than that, and of course the dishwasher has changed. Even the original stove is there and the flooring is still original as well. And obviously the trellis above and other elements. These are, by the way, the tutels in this photo. That's the couple. I will talk quickly about the tutors in the next slide, please. Thank you. Here we see also the original bathroom. The color has changed in the meantime, but this is the original bathroom design and the shared hallway that is part of this syncopation of spaces that Price used a lot in smaller floor plates. Syncopation is kind of like a copying, layering of solo spaces. Next slide. Here we see the original lanai where the deck is now built over it, so you can see it follow the deck. The current deck follows the shape too, so there's enough originality there. And the master bedroom with the original wood paneling, and you can see that the wood paneling is fairly original because there seems to have been a painting on the wall, but the staining is still looking different. Next slide. This is a later photo facing the valley, so we have a bit of a view of the roof, which is a simple build-up roof.
Mm-hmm.
Next slide. The tutels themselves were employed by... The building was actually publicized quite a bit. The tutels themselves worked for Hawaiian Airlines. Raymond Tutel was a meteorologist, and I think she worked originally as stewardess and then in dispatch. This is the only surviving plan so far of the residence, out of which we reconstructed the actual floor plan. Next slide. The book has been featured in an advertising. The building has been featured in advertising and in the book Alfred Price Displaced. Next slide. And this is the curious thing. This is, I think, why this residence is so important for as an architectural object. This is a rare occurrence of a so-called displacement in plan that is, for modernist architects, relatively rare at this time. It's not unique, but it is very rare. And you can probably count a handful of projects, like maybe some Schindler projects and a few others of the outlier architects that have done this slight shift out of displacement that then creates those overlocking zones, as you can see here dotted in red, happening. This is, as for architectural studies, extremely critical, and students are obviously pilgrimaging kind of like to this small residence, as Heather can attest to this. Next slide. We talked about Alfred Price. I don't think I need to repeat this right now anymore.
I remember it.
Yeah. All right. I'll leave you then here. Thank you.
So I'm going to open it to questions, but I'm going to hazard just the one small suggestion. I think it's called a clear story window, not a dormer window, right?
Well, clear story is the band that I'm talking. Uh-huh. Like I was talking about this
the
push-up.
Oh, I see.
That's what I out of lack of better words, could
okay.
consider a dormer, but because it kind of is like a dormer, but better words.
There's got to be a better word.
There must be a better
dormer
word.
Dormer kind of almost refers to like on the roof.
Projection.
Projection.
Projected.
Yes, cantilever. But yes.
Projecting cantilever.
My favorite part of
glass.
The board reviews is finding the right word for.
And I would be happy to find the right word because I haven't found it.
Yeah.
This is a relatively frequent thing that PRESS does frequently,
uh-huh.
like
yeah.
push out the windows, slant them even sometimes, and create this kind of like this step out condition in their spaces,
uh-huh.
but I haven't found the proper word yet.
Yeah, projection
yeah.
seems good. Yeah.
Projected.
But we don't need to.
No.
Yeah, it's not
fuss with that.
Required. I would suggest, as with the previous one, B isn't really applicable because it is the work of a master, which is covered specifically under C.
I understand. So, I recognize this right now. If we can make this,
and to clarify, do they want to be listed on both the state and natural registers?
I would think for the importance of this particular residence in the architectural canon, I would suggest that it would be necessary.
Okay. Trish, any questions?
No questions. This is a
lovely right.
post. I love that one.
So could we entertain a motion?
I will make a motion to list this property on the State Historic Register and recommend it to be listed on the National Register of Historic Places at the local level under Criterion C.
And the second for that? Graham has seconded it. So, any further discussion? If not, let's call the vote. All those in favor? Trish? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so it's unanimous, so thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this. Thank
yeah.
you very
much. Our next property is at 3206 Melly Melly Place. It's the Stevenson residence. Thank you for coming today, and nice to see you again.
Thank you all for having us. My name is Trina Orimoto. This is my partner,
Aaron.
And we have the privilege of being the homeowners and living at 3206 Melly Melly Place in Manoa off of Woodlawn. We're submitting this for your consideration under Criterion B and C, which I know we've had a lot of discussion on, so we'll talk about that later. But just grateful to you all for serving the role that you do.
Yeah. And to speed things along, I think we have the fortune and privilege of piggybacking off of the expert who literally wrote the book on Price. So we'll very much shorthand the significance of Price and speak more towards the significance of
Thanks.
And
Thanks.
So next slide. So this is the home, actually, and when it was originally developed and finished in 1952. And I will say, I know we're not going to talk too much about Poppy Price, thanks to Axel, but I'm just so grateful to him for the Art in Public Spaces program, which is actually the art that's surrounding you in this boardroom right now, and the Artists in Schools program, too, which brings teaching artists to public schools. Especially since many schools don't have designated art teachers anymore. Oh, yes, and my grandpa and his siblings also went to La Pohoihoi Elementary School before it was moved to the higher location.
Uh-huh. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Try it again.
I believe the PDF was better. Sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
Do you want to start talking about
that? Yeah. So the home, so you're seeing a view from, I believe it's Woodlawn Terrace looking out, and if you see the, what's interesting about this street is it was developed by Price for him to live on, and he still, his family still has a house, I believe it entered the registry this year, recently, last session. And this R's denominated would be, I think, the fourth historic house, because at the time it was built, almost all of the houses were designed by Price and his architecture firm, and some of his colleagues lived on the street. And so I think they kind of divided it half for them, half to fund their building of their houses.
private residents. So our house was built around the same time. My twin brother lives next door in another private house. And this was built in and finished in 52. I think it was commenced in 51. And it very much, what we love about it is it's almost entirely extant to the original. There's been very little change, and it was very well preserved, especially by the third owner. So it was built by the Stevensons. There's not much that we know about the Stevensons themselves. I think they were here for about the 2 years they lived in the house, and then sold it and moved back to the mainland. And then it was owned by the Wongs, and they also were in the house for about 2 to 3 years. And what they did that was significant is they hired Richard C. Tong, which I think is an important contribution for significance, who was the first Chinese-American landscape architect in Hawaii. He's also considered called the grandfather of Tropicalia and that school of kind of integrating indoor-outdoor spaces, trying to combine exotics with native, a sort of natural cultivated wild rainforest system. And Tong himself is famous for having places such as the gardens at the International Airport and the Halekulani Hotel, and I believe UH has some, and among others. So we are very fortunate. I think in our application, you'll see there's the original blueprints from Tong, and a lot of his design is still in place. And then the third owners were the Kaya family, and they were Japanese farmers. And so they very lovingly landscaped and took care and added some beautiful additions, such as persimmons and oranges and avocados. But then you'll also see the birds of paradise are still there. We added some kalo during COVID, as well as about 80 fruit trees around my property and my brother's property next door, including ulu and uala and banana.
Next slide, please. Yeah, we can start flying.
Yeah, we can fly through kind of the architecture.
Sorry, I don't know what's doing that. I'm just going to it from presentation and not present it, I think.
Just want to
hear.
So what's lovely about the property, it's also an L-shaped property, pretty clear L-shape, that borders a board of water easement. And so there's a lovely natural flow that I think was very much intentional, where what Price did really well with this house in particular is he creates these interesting architectural promenades throughout the house, where you go from kind of tight corridors into these interesting spatial reveals. And some of that is manufactured by low ceilings or like tight corners coming into the house up the front stairways into this kind of pavilion-like lanai. But then he also has an integration of kind of the nature itself. So you see the natural flow, which also works in the ventilation of the Venturi effect, the passive air system that he has, of the Ko'ola Mountains in the back all the way to the ocean. So there's a architectural ahapua'a system that he built in place that is really lovely and keeps a natural passive cooling system in the house. And then these kind of long butterfly gable roof that also protects from the sun. It has a natural flow of both airflow circulation and kind of how much water we get in Manoa. So we get views throughout the house as well as the circulation. What's really interesting too about the house is you see prominently featured this calm, straight, and wood paneling that I haven't seen in a lot of his other work locally, but is very much featured from the walls in the living room. There's a huge wall.
What slide do you want us to be on?
We could be on.
Click through
25
and then land at 8.
Yeah, so that's some Richard Tong landscaping. There's the Lanai Pavilion. And then in here you'll see the combed wood going across the right-hand wall and then across the banisters. It's also, if you go to the next slide, you'll see on that roofing. And he also has a lot of color pops that is a combination of his sort of Austrian Bauhaus modernist integration with sort of more of a warm tropical modernism of Hawaii, which made him really, really unique because I think he was the first European architect to kind of really integrate those styles that he brought from Austria with kind of the Frank Lloyd Wright school.
So those colors are original colors?
Those colors, I believe, were they not original?
But we tried to integrate colors that we might have used. And I think originally the house was like a lime green and a salmon.
And we did consult his grandson, Laka, who also lives up the street. And he did say he had, I don't know if it was exactly these colors, but he did have color pops like this
which
throughout the house.
Which definitely is evident in the kitchen, which is slide number 10. And you'll notice the countertops and also in the bathroom too.
Mm-hmm.
Which are all still original.
And it's all still the same built-in millwork, as Axel was talking about. You'll see the, I don't know what the right word is, but it's
the canted
drawers.
Yes,
that are built in with the wood, so it actually slides. So everything, including like the sliding doors in the living room that you saw, is all built in to slide naturally along its frame. And the wood itself. And it also creates really interesting shadow perspectives throughout the day in the way that all of the millwork functions within the kind of lighting itself of the house. Talk about that.
Sure. I know we're tight on time, so I just wanted to mention our banner chair already. We can go to slide 11.
Mm-hmm.
That the house, there are a number of Kaisompa Mele Mele plates.
The Bushnell, the King, and the Price, where he himself resided. The Bushnell is my brother's next door.
The King
is one up from it, so we're all in a row. So these would be 1, 2, 3, which is pretty rare to have an architect who built all the houses on the street he himself lived on, and there was sort of a pride of not just ownership of his own house, but of the neighborhood. He essentially created this cul-de-sac.
And I just wanted to end by saying thank you, and also thank you to Axel and Olivier and Jordan, Rebecca, and Alaka and Val, who have supported us through this application, and our kids are grateful too.
All right, thank you.
You gotta add the dog to the photo.
Sorry.
Yeah. Where is it?
Yeah.
Where is the dog?
Where's
the
dog? Cute on last side.
All right, okay. So anybody have any questions that haven't been answered yet? Trisha, did you have any questions? Okay.
No, I remember your brother's presentation. I enjoyed these houses. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's a little more eloquent than I am.
Yeah,
he looks like me, but he speaks better.
You're both
great. I can tell you apart.
Have one question out of curiosity. Since there is this group of homes and they are kind of integrated into the landscape, have you all ever gotten together and thought about a district?
We have.
For multiple property?
We've actually put it out to the entire neighborhood of the people that have houses.
My sister-in-law was really looking into it.
She was really looking into it, and it seemed like the individuals that were interested have submitted so far individually, and I think people are just busy, and so like the thought of adding something else to their plate at the moment. So
sure,
we had
a
hard time of just corralling everybody, but before we applied, that was what we were thinking we were going to do it.
No,
within
of course.
That. And so we're still fighting that fight because there's so many other beautiful houses that are in incredible shape.
Sure. No, of course, the district wouldn't help you with the tax abatement program because you have to be individually listed for the tax abatement.
So it's just
it would only be useful for the National Register.
The
National Register part of it.
Yeah, I would encourage that. And also, if there are other landscape designs that are integrated within that, you know, there might be another significance element there that hasn't been fully explored. If it's one by one, so just a thought, recommendation, encouragement.
Thanks, Adrian. Okay, could we someone make a motion, please? And then once again, the criterion B will not be considered.
Yeah, I would, there's another one here. Do we want to talk about, they have it checked as statewide. I think most of the residents, as we've looked at local, is really the level of a residence, typically.
Thanks for catching that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay,
so
turns or
whose turn is it? Tricia, would you like to make a motion?
Sure. I move that. Sorry, what's the exact property title?
Alfred
Stevenson residence.
The Mr. and Mrs. Albert O. Stevenson residence at 3206 Mele Mele Place, TMK 129070, parcel 001, under criterion C, just C, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. On the state and no national, right? The state?
Well, you did recommend for the national.
But are we including a recommendation to the national on this as well?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, and a recommendation to the National Register.
At the local level.
At the local level.
I'll second.
All right, if there's no further discussion, I call the vote. All those in favor? Yeah. Trish, okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you
for the nice tour of your house.
So
all right, we have two more left. We have the Duke Choi and Mary Choi residents. Don is representing the owners. Good morning.
Hello. I'm Don Hibbert.
Nice to see you again, Don.
Yes. See you all. Okay. Duke Cho Choi, Mary Choi residence, is in Paul Valley, 2505 Alaula Way.
Sorry, I don't know how this one works. There we go.
Built in 1956 by Stephen Oyakawa. It was his first house in Hawaii. He had just come to visit at that time. He was born and raised here. Well, about that later. Okay, next. It's significant at the local level under criterion C is a good example of a 1950s modern style house in Honolulu. The house includes a number of distinctive features. It's typical of this period in its design, materials, workmanship, and methods of construction. The house is essentially a U-shaped, essentially two shed roof addition or sections connected by a walkway. The play area is in the middle. Next. Where the owners, besides showing you the drawings yesterday, you do have some of the original rendering, which were done by the original owners. Here's a view of the play area in the center. You see children playing. Next. Here is the floor plan. As you see, as you remember, the bedroom wing is the one wing going off, which has the three bedrooms for the four girls. Core access for the walkway has two bedrooms, bathroom off it, and then it opens up into the living room, kitchen wing at the top. Here's a view of the bedrooms from yesterday, as I said. You have similar light doors that close off each of the bedrooms. The bedrooms have built-ins. The windows on top have frameless, they're frameless. Clear stories above. Sliding doors, all the original sliding doors going outside. And then the hallway takes a rather dramatic bend. Also, the lowering and ceiling plays with space a lot, I think, very effectively. Again, the bedroom on the left. And next. And here's a view of the hallway going the other way. And the interesting projecting and receding courses in the work is very interesting. I also like the way he handles the transition between the concrete block and the redwood walls. Okay. Also mentioned the fireplace yesterday, both sides. As you can see, the outside as well as the inside. Next. And here is a view of the living room looking from the other side. And we have the lanai outside. Next. And here's the original rendering of the kitchen, which you can see is still pretty much intact. Yeah. He already has the range and
the
built-in oven. You can see where the TV was supposed to go. And the ironing board pops down there.
pots hanging from the wall. I think.
And then here you can see essentially how open the living room kitchen just flows together. And you have your built-in dining room table on the top left. You have your built-in phonograph at the bottom. You can see here that the doors open, how that whole space opened up very much. And very much all the windows makes it a very light and open experience. Not only you don't feel as enclosed even with the doors closed. Next. And the nice little feature of the lights that do inside and outside. Very related. Okay. The Choys liked the house so much they wrote a letter to the editor of the newspaper, which was published. And they say, "We constantly enjoy the house's functional yet beautiful atmosphere that pervades the interior space. Although designed with a limited space and on a limited budget, its feeling of airiness and space is conveyed throughout. Our home includes 5 bedrooms, a fireplace area, and an indoor-outdoor living area, all beautifully utilized and integrated. Living it is a daily pleasurable experience." I don't think an architect could ask for anything better.
But, it's a good Yelp review.
Yeah. 5 stars would recommend.
Oyakawa was born in Kahalu on Oahu and went to McKinley High School. He spent 2 years at UH, and then he transferred to the University of Illinois, where he got his degree in architecture in 1944. Since it was the middle of the war, he could not come back to Hawaii. There was no transit back. So he thought, what to do? He saw a chance, I might be able to work for Frank Lloyd Wright. So he applied and got accepted, and he ended up working for Wright until 1959 when Wright died. He was more or less a head instructor at Taliesin by the end of the time. After Wright died, he came back to Oahu, and he'll practice here for throughout the end of the 50s and throughout the 60s and early 70s. And then he moves to Colorado, and he dies in Denver in 1980 from cancer. He was only 59 years old at that time. And, as you can see here, the NOAA visitors on the tour, this is talking about the Choi residents. They were doing a tour, an AIA tour of houses, which they were doing in the 50s, and they took the Choi house. And they said the house was designed by Yoyokawa, a student of Frank Lloyd Wright, and has many unusual features and examples of local art. And I think it is a very well done modern house. Other examples of houses or buildings by Oyakawa next. This is the building in the background is this building, which is still standing on Kapiolani Boulevard. It's apartments that he built for his father, but a very radiant.
Yeah, I go by that all the time.
Yeah. I was going to say,
that stays in existence. Next, here you can see the front built lanai walkway on the second floor, very radiant. Next, and here's the rear elevation. We have walk floor to wall louvers. We use a slum block. And here's another one. This is the Teruya Apartments. This is in Makiki, which you also designed. And interesting, each apartment has its own individual lanai rather than sitting them together. Although you have the lanai walkways on either side. Next. Other buildings. This one's on the register. This is the Naifler residence up in Manoa, kind of very Japanese style. This is the living room. That wall you see in the front is all screens, and they do have shoji that can close it off. Next, this is another house on Diamond Head, which is also on the register.
Miyazaki, is it?
I think so. Miyaki.
Miyaki, yeah.
I think so. But that's so. Those two houses are the only two houses right now that are on the register. Other buildings, they use the Liliha Library. Next, IA Library, which is a hexagonal shape. Next, the Hui Library, which has a hyperbolic roof sweeping, and round dormitories at UH. And next, also, I just found out we did the Moanalua intermediate school, which is again all hexagonal. Those buildings are still standing as well. Hmm. Next. Now, this house we're building, which was Frankie Cam's realty office, which was on Dillingham, but I drove by there and it's now a vacant lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very impressive building. Next. We also did the polymedical building, which still stands on Milwaukee. They just put something in front of it, but I don't know. This building is still empty. I don't know what's going to happen with it. And that's it.
Thanks, Don. Any questions? Anything?
Do you know if, so in plan, you know, that indoor-outdoor fireplace is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But the backside of it always feels like, right now, it feels like it's unusable. But in plan, I could see that there was like some sort of curved retaining wall. Is there, in any of the old photos, was that ever built or no?
No, it was never built.
On the plan, it actually said omit on it. I was looking I was curious about that on the site visit. So it was designed but never built. So the never building is actually documented.
I think there was one photo they had out yesterday showing the two little girls.
Yeah, and I just didn't look closely at it. Okay.
Hmm.
It would be nice to have that.
I know, right?
You know, finishing up the space.
Do the owners have any intent of putting that in? No, I don't know. I'm just kidding.
It's bad. Destroy the integrity.
Would that, would it?
Well, if it's true to the original plan, then maybe.
Right.
That was when I worked for the investment tax credit program, there would be architects wanting to do additional stuff based on the original intent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They always denied it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes they wanted to add additional stories because the building was originally going to be, you know.
Yes.
42 stories, not 36, and they said we just add the other stories.
In landscape, sometimes it's the other way around, because you know, there's not something there that would be destroyed by adding it. So it's more of an additive than adding a story to a building is a little more destructive.
That's fair enough.
So
okay, so it's state and national.
Yes.
Okay. So I entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that the Troy residents. Be added to the State Register of Historic Places under criterion C and recommended to the National Register of Historic Places at a local level of significance.
Second.
Okay.
All right.
So all in favor? Just for future, it seems we all got to learn to say Hawaii Register of Historic Places.
What did I say? State.
State.
Oh, okay. This
state.
What's
better than
this particular state?
At times, we've had members insisting on calling it the registry all the time.
Okay.
So we're closer.
Sorry.
No. I said the same. I think my.
You need it written on the wall, you know.
Okay. The next nomination I also have. This is the Walter J. and Emma Snyder residence. It's located at 2466 Manoa Road. We saw yesterday. The date of construction is 1938, and the architect is Alvin J. Schattinger in collaboration with Tom Gill. I don't know exactly what that means, so let's remember. And
Tom Gill's with the Gill family, I guess, right?
He's the grandfather of Gary.
Uh-huh.
And he came out, he was doing architecture in the teens.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the Walter and Emma Snyder residence is significant at the local level under criterion C. It's a good example of modern Hawaiian regional style house built during the 1930s. Modern. The house includes a number of distinctive features in typical experience, design, materials, workmanship, and methods of construction. Another house that's very much intact and very representative of modern style that's coming in the 30s and integrating it with the Hawaii regional style as well. And you have the double pitch hip roof, the horizontal facade, the horizontal siding, emphasizing that corner windows, the lava rock on the foundation,
mm-hmm.
sort of deco iron railing going all the windows, the horizontal pane, which was very popular during the 30s. Next. The house inside, the rounded corners, again, a very flowing living room, dining room, has the original floors, original walls, ceiling, corner windows you can see here very well. And again, O&I, which is enclosed, but originally was enclosed with sliding doors, has a lava rock fireplace. The bathroom is still very much on track with the tile work. And other examples that are on the register, this is example more modern style, not so much Hawaii modern, but the Abbott resident, which is in Kahala, but very similar massing. Next, the Black residence, also in Kahala. This was done by Asapalp in the 30s, and again, very much a horizontal. Mm-hmm. And hanging those up. Regional stuff with the 30s are happening. This is the Gates residence on Diamond Head, which was done by Martin. This is a double picture. It's also very modern in ways. The house, the Height residence up in Nuuanu Valley by Ali Uliais, I think you two have seen it at least, very much intact. Just in that also the one I don't think everybody got to see it, but we saw it in pictures. Mm-hmm. We didn't take the site visit, but the, also by Ives, the Walker residence out in Mailaikahana. And more recently, the Johnson residence on the Diamond Head, which is also by Asapal. And Schattinger works in a multiplicity of styles. This is by far the most modern house I ever saw. The only example I know of Hawaii-style house they did was, this is the Lynn residence, which is up behind Judd Hillside.
Okay.
In Manoa. And that one I just want to say, can you go back?
Yes.
I know after they built it, they stuck a big storage container in the front yard. And Mike Gushard came by one day when he was working for the state and made problems for him. He said, no, you never asked us to put that in and get rid of it. And now I see they have this covered lanai in the front. And I don't know if they went to the state or if that's something Mike worked out with them and said, okay, get rid of the container. You can do this. Hmm. But I don't know when that was added.
It doesn't really go, does it?
Not really.
Yeah. But it's
clearly different, though. You know, that's a
this is Schattinger's own house, which is at the corner of Kahala Avenue on Hunapai.
That's not bad.
He does a lot of Tudor style houses. This is one of the nicest ones. I was shocked to find out they're renting this out for $15,000 a month now.
So cheap.
Next. This is another one of his Tudor style houses. He put on just the last 2 or 3 years. He did this house for his daughter. This is also in Kahala on Royal Place. Next, we also just recently did this house, a more modest bungalow, condo residence, and which is more typical of a lot of his houses. He worked for several years with Lors and Cook as well. Next.
That's it.
That's it. Okay.
Thanks.
Again, the house very much intact. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very good example of modern regionalism.
I like we refine the terminology some.
Yes.
To kind of identify. I guess you'd have to say late 30s, all right? Because early 30s is still the peak of regionalism.
You don't start getting the real horizontality.
Because I'm thinking Ali Kalani, right? Yeah. 1931.
Yeah.
Still very much in the regionalist tradition with the casements and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you even get immigration stations before. Mm-hmm.
What was it in the research that, because you said that in the newspaper it was listed as Schattinger and Gill. Yeah. What was it that made you think it was mostly primary Schattinger?
Because his name was first.
Okay. Well, did they often collaborate, or was
no, it's the first time I've seen that. It's the first time I've seen Gill collaborating with anyone.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what's causing that.
Mm. Okay.
And Gill does mostly very traditional. I've seen him do some the Birmingham residence, the nice bungalow just below Queen Emma's Summer Palace on the Holly. That bungalow is one of Gill's early houses. He did do some. Scratch that. There's another house like cottages, but it's also in a period style.
Hmm.
I haven't, this is again early, so I don't know. I don't think it's new. It's, I don't know. I think it's just the times that are influencing both of them.
So, other than that article, it wasn't like you had like plans or something that you were based on off of. Okay.
No.
Are there any other, just out of curiosity, are there any other Gill projects that are on the register?
The Birmingham
just
house
the Birmingham?
Is on the register. I'm trying to, destroying a blank, the other house might be.
Look it up.
Well,
okay.
There are no other questions or even, could we go ahead and have a motion, please?
I got the last one.
Okay, so question, are we nominating for
state
the state and national? Okay. I would like to make a motion that the Walter J. and Emma Snyder residence at 2466 Manoa Road be listed in the Hawaii Register of Historic Places and recommended to the National Register of Historic Places at a local level under Criterion C.
I'll second.
Graham seconded that. Okay. So there's no further discussion. I call the vote. All those in favor? Okay, unanimous. So that ends our agenda for the listings, but we have other items.
We may,
we got 45 minutes, guys.
Yeah, we could actually pick back up. Can we amend the agenda to put the things back on it that we...
Well, we just deferred it, right?
We put it to the end, yeah.
Yeah, at the end, yeah.
Okay, so we'll go back then to... Do you want to do the staff report first?
I was going to say, why don't we? Then we don't need to do any change to the agenda.
Okay.
We've already put the other at the end. So. Staff report?
I thought we put B and C next.
We're going to do that at the end.
Okay.
Do it at the end.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
okay.
Fine. It doesn't require a vote.
Yeah.
Well, B...
B is just the minutes.
B and C, that does require a vote. Plus the meeting for the meeting schedule for next year requires a vote.
Yeah, so C we definitely need to I would suggest that
start with
C.
C
first. Yeah. Is that okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
You're the boss.
I think that's fine. We'll begin with C and we'll wait for the staff report. So, can we have a motion to approve the minutes and agendas for the 2026 calendar?
Well, it's the approval of the minutes and agendas and approval of the calendar,
right.
Two separate items.
Okay.
So, the minutes and agendas are passed from 2025.
Right. Uh-huh.
I'll make a motion that we approve the draft minutes and agendas for the July 31st meeting and
November.
That's today. Oh, that was yesterday.
The agenda for yesterday
and the minutes for August's meeting.
I'll second that.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, now we have to move to the 2026 calendar. It's in the box on this, in the papers here.
Yeah.
So that'd be Friday, February 20th, Friday, May 15th, Friday, August 7th, and Friday, November 20th.
Okay, were we discussing possible change of the 15th at some point? Do we need to discuss that?
No, I made my flight, so I'll be in Seattle. So I'm just flying to Seattle the day before. So I'll be just virtually, but I can do the 15th.
Okay. Very good.
And I believe that by August 7th, I'll no longer be on the board. Right?
Is that what you're
trying?
Yes.
No.
Oh, no. I know. Boo.
Boo.
You gotta.
Can he hold over?
I think this July. Is it July 31st or June 30th?
I think it's June.
Yeah, I think so too.
And since you done two terms.
It's the 30th then.
It'd be difficult to extend.
And my terms are 3 years each or 4 years?
It depends on what they put in the letter. But I think you had 2-3 years.
I think
so. Can't he stay another 2 years just as a holdover? Because isn't it by law you can't do more than 8?
I will have to check on that.
Thanks.
If you would be willing to do that.
Yeah, of course I'm willing to do that.
Planning a vacation.
No.
I'm happy to do that.
Katie did that, right? Katie stuck around for another meeting or two, didn't she?
Do you remember now? Can I stay on for additional years?
So as far as new members...
I like
members,
doing my public service, and I learn a lot from all these meetings.
As far as new members, is there... It's just kind of a rolling deadline, right? For like, if someone was interested in applying to be on the board, they could just submit their application.
Yes.
And have you had anyone submit through you?
No one has contacted me, but I've heard that people are interested. And
okay.
Yeah.
In the past, quite often it was decided that somehow someone of the Senate appointed somebody. Oftentimes, correct.
Well, it isn't. The governor appoints.
But, I mean, someone that would begin at that level. I mean, we've had people that we didn't know were going to end up on the board before.
Right. The applications don't come to the board. They go a different
route.
Yeah. So I was just curious about that.
So there could be some in the hopper.
Right. That was what I was asking.
But we don't know.
But she does. So that's why I was asking. Okay, so any other discussion
on the dates?
I think so. I can move. Did we accept the calendar? Sorry, Graham, did you include the calendar to be accepted, or
nope.
Did you just do the minutes? You just did the minutes, right?
Correct.
So I move to accept the 2026 White Historic Review Board calendar as listed in the agenda.
Okay.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so that's that.
And then the 3 minute.
Now we should remove to our chairperson, vice chair.
Oh, one more thing, the 3 minute testimony time.
All right.
Yeah.
We'd like to make that a formal part of our rules and procedures. Is that correct?
We just like to have it documented in the minutes so that we can have a reference in case anyone asks in the future.
So... Can I go ahead and say that we have in the past informally, or we have suggested that people making presentations limit their presentations to 3 minutes, and I'd like to say that that is now an ongoing expectation. Is that correct?
Policy.
That's,
a policy?
Policy.
Someone,
do we need a motion? Or
I think we do.
Oh, okay. I'll make that motion. I'll formalize that as a policy. That nomination, people presenting nominations limit their presentations to 3 minutes.
Well,
no, just commentators, not the presenters, just public testimony.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was about to say, I'm like, that seems a little...
Don't worry, we're not going to cut you off. Just the commentators.
Should we have...
So, public commentary is limited to 3 minutes.
Like I said, to Mary,
it's pretty standard, right? 3 minutes in most public hearings.
But we actually very rarely get any public commentary anyway. So,
may I just further clarify? It's 3 minutes per agenda item.
Okay.
Per agenda item, not per speaker.
Yes. Right. So, it's something else happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For another nomination, they do also have another 3 minutes.
So, per agenda item per speaker. So say if Don shows up to testify in support of 3 different agenda items, he individually would give 3 minutes on each item, not 3 minutes for all the public. It's just
correct.
3 minutes per individual.
So I want to make that real clear then.
Yeah.
What is that? It's 3 minutes per agenda item.
Testimony. Per person for testimony.
Okay. We have a motion.
Okay.
We have a second.
Okay, let's state it clearly.
Okay. So, making it policy that public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per person per agenda item.
Oh, perfect. I'll second.
Just should second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So now we return to elections, correct?
Yes.
Mary, is that right?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. If trying to get.
Got you.
Could you please repeat the question?
Oh, do we do the election now?
The election?
Chair and vice chair? Isn't that on our agenda?
Yes,
so I think you had talked about.
Do you want to save that until next meeting in case we get any more board members?
Yeah, that's a good idea because Bill's leaving too. So I think Bill's doing a great job and he can continue to act as chair in his vice chair role. Right, Mary?
Yes.
I'm willing to do it till the end of the year. That's fine.
That sounds good.
But I think at some point we'd like to have somebody else as chair.
At some point.
Both Graham and Adrian and Tish, you all have shown great leadership potential and I would love to step back and let one of you do that. I've always liked being vice chair myself.
Well, let's see if we get more people and then I love having Bill. Bill's my former professor. It makes me so happy.
Former
I love it.
So if we can defer that to the next meeting agenda, is that what we would say?
With the hope that we have more members, I suppose.
Do we have to make a motion or is that just a...
No, we can just defer, right? Mary, do we need to?
I don't think so. We just defer this agenda item.
Okay. So now staff report, correct?
So we just got word that Jessica won't be able to join us until 11:10. And so would it be possible to take a recess until then?
Yeah, and then you're going to talk about the plan, so I'm going to go and make sure I get to my flight on time because I was pushing it a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, so we'll take a break, and then I won't come. So you'll lose quorum, Mary, but I think Jess is going to just give the report and talk about the review plan, or the plan review. So, okay, thank you, everybody. Thank you, the audience, for going fast.
Have a safe flight, Trish.
Thank you very much, everybody. See everybody later. Take care. Goodbye.
Bye.
Can?
Has to be can shaped. Yeah. If it doesn't come out of the can in one piece, it's bad luck for the coming year. I mean, there's a whole.
It's a good.
Yeah. It's a personal family tradition.
Yeah. Green bean casserole
with the onions.
So we're going to reconvene at this point.
Sorry,
for the staff
we're on
report.
Thanksgiving already.
I'm sorry. It was business, not displeasure, and we were working out the experts at the Phallus series.
Okay.
For January, February, and March, so we're caught up in conversations, and my apologies if it goes away.
We were just getting hungry.
You didn't find it. The Cheez-Its, right? The Cheez-Its are delicious. And a whole lunch in itself.
At least two food groups in there.
The cheese in it.
So, Jessica, are you there?
Oh. Sorry, I'm here. I'm going to log in with my computer now that I'm back to the office so that it's just probably clear. Give me one second.
Cool.
So that's the new pyramid devised by our Secretary of Health.
Hey, Tiare, can you let me into the room? Yes. I think I'm just... Okay, thank you.
Well, we need every...
Let's see, food groups, that salt, sugar, caffeine. Those are the food groups.
That's what I was saying.
Okay.
She's just got protein.
This is on the record, though.
Okay, I should be on. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Still can.
Wait, you guys went through this agenda way quicker than I anticipated.
We were like maximally efficient today.
Yeah, we are under pressure. One of our moms had to leave.
Yeah, so congratulations on getting through the agenda so quickly.
I think the limited visit was actually very useful because we really were able to take a good look at the all the properties that were covered. So didn't need to spend as much time on presentations as sometimes happens.
Yeah. And most of my staff report is stuff that I think will be more useful to the three of you because a lot of it Trish already knows. So it's not a big surprise, except for some of the staffing updates in and of themselves. So I guess it's really just the preservation plan stuff that she knows a lot about, actually, now that I think about it. So in terms of the Shifty staff report, between your last meeting and this meeting, we've brought on board, fully brought on board, one new staff person, our Maui OA. Her name's Emily. She's excellent. So if you guys are doing work on Maui and you need to interact with the office, please stop by and say hi to her.
What's her name?
Emily. Her first name is Emily. I can't remember Emily's last name right now. But she just started a few weeks ago. I think she's been with us less than a month, but probably more than 2 weeks. So maybe 3 weeks, getting close to her first full month.
She's full-time with SHPD, or is she the CLG hire for the county?
No, she's the full-time employee for SHPD.
Okay.
Cool.
Let's see what else is going on. I think we might have reported on last meeting, working on getting another 5 positions posted. Those positions have since been posted. They included 3 archaeology positions and 2 architecture branch positions. We're closing up the hiring process, meaning that we've made offers, and are just waiting for paperwork to be processed on 3 of those individuals, and then 2 other positions, 2 archaeology positions, we're working out who to make offers to. And I'm hoping to have all of that sorted before the end of this month. So the 2 architectural historian positions will be working under Mary. They're for 60-106 reviews and to help with the Federal Historic Preservation Tax Credit Program. I anticipate those 2 individuals to start sometime at the beginning of the new year. And then one of the archaeologists that we made an offer for and accepted, that individual is a little farther ahead. So they, depending upon when they're available to come on board, they may start before the end of this year. They may also elect to start at the beginning of the year because of the holidays. And then the other 2 individuals, we just need to finalize making offers and things like that for. So by the next review board meeting, which I think is in February, we likely will have 5 new Shifty staff people to introduce you guys to, or at least let you guys know who they are. Yeah. And then in addition to that, we have, I think, another 12 positions that we can get posted that we're working on the PDs and the paperwork for to get those posted live. I'm highly motivated to get those going because we've essentially been told that because of the budget limitations this upcoming year due to federal cuts and still having to do investments in wildfire recovery, that the budget is going to be extraordinarily tight and that they will likely be going after vacant positions to like take them back to money that was marked for those positions and stuff. So I need to get the hiring for those vacancies like well enough along so that they can't do that for us. And that includes several other archaeology positions, the CLG position for us, the National Register position for us, and a grants manager position and a few others. So, and then we have 3 positions that we can't fill because they're federally funded and we just don't have enough federal funds to fill them at the moment. So that's that. As you may have already know, we're in the midst of doing stakeholder consultations for our preservation plan. And the preservation plan is a requirement of our federal grant in the Federal Historic Preservation Program. It also is a requirement of the State Historic Preservation Program. I think the last plan that we had that was completed was done in like 2016 and it expired in like 2020, something like that. And then Alan, under his leadership, he started a plan, but they weren't able to get it finished. And so now we're kind of starting from scratch, but also using the data collected last time to help inform, you know, recommendations for, you know, the focus and future of historic preservation in Hawaii based off those consultations. So we don't want to completely scrap all that work that was done or you know, all the information that was shared from the public, but we do know that we need to, like, essentially start the process from scratch for National Park Service's requirements. So we're kind of doing a hybrid approach to that. These stakeholder meetings will inform, like, a really preliminary sort of draft that we can circulate to the public. So they have something to, like, evaluate and a starting place for their comments. It's not meant to be the final draft in any way, shape, or form, but just, like, based on stakeholders, this is what their responses have been. Please feel free to read them. You can agree, you can disagree, you can have additional ideas, but it's at least a starting framework for them to respond off of. So that sort of very preliminary draft plan should be compiled early next year, and then we'll be doing, I think it's 9 public meetings, in-person public meetings, and an additional 10th Zoom call for the public to get public feedback on what they believe should be in the preservation plan. And then the final plan should be circulated again to all of the primary stakeholders and the public after that consultation period for review and comment sometime next spring. And then the final plan should be solidified by next June in terms of time frame. So we're still on track to meeting all those deadlines. I know that some of you aren't able to attend the Historic Preservation Review Board and Cultural Resources Commission meeting on December 3rd, but you're more than welcome to attend any of the other stakeholder meetings that, you know, align with your experience and background. Adrian, I know you kind of cross over a little bit. There isn't one that's focused on, like, planners or that sort of thing, but feel free to attend any of them that you think, if you can't attend on December 3rd, that would be appropriate.
Not sure I can do December 3rd. I need to double check my schedule, yeah. But if I can get the other dates to you, I'll be at something.
Okay. And then if we did, I think
it's an evening Zoom call, right? Or what is it? Yeah. An in-person thing? Okay.
No, it's evening. It's Zoom. You can do it from hopefully the comfort of your home instead of having to go out into the world after a long work day.
I'll be traveling, unfortunately, that day.
So. What time is the... What time is it on the 3rd? Is it
6? I think it's 5 to 7 is what it's scheduled.
Okay.
But if you all want to do a follow-up meeting or a separate sort of discussion amongst you all, we can do that if none of you can attend that one. We'll just have to, like, work out a date that works for everyone. But I don't... That being said, and I try to communicate this in that email, the Cultural Resources Commissions have kind of similar roles and responsibilities, but on the county level that you all have. We were hoping that it would be at least a good opportunity for some of them to meet some of you and, you know, talk in a meeting room together. So if this doesn't work, we might look for another opportunity to bring you all together to kind of just talk shop or, you know, talk related interests, that kind of thing. Because I'm trying to get them to be inspired to... So you guys have the action role when it comes to National Register. They have an action role when it comes to the CLG program and the CLG grant. And I'm hoping that maybe if they talk to each other and talk to you all, it might inspire some people to, like, take action on doing projects using CLG money. Because I've tried to berate them or encourage them or cheerlead them to, like, come up with something. But this might be an opportunity to get some other folks to also cheer them on, too. I don't know. So that
for me,
was
the beginning of the next year would be best.
Okay. Maybe we'll try it again then once they've got the draft stakeholder plan together, and then maybe do a separate stakeholder meeting just for you all to kind of respond to that. Maybe that's something I can talk to Trish about scheduling. Because then you can also review something tangible and comment on it in, like, a meeting type forum. I don't know.
Yeah, that might be good.
Okay. What else is going on? Some of you may know that the National Historic Preservation Act was brought up during a congressional hearing in DC, like last month, I believe it was. I think it was October. There were representatives from the it was the Utah SHPO, I forget which tribal nation it was, from Arizona or New Mexico, and then there was a representative of the energy for-profit sector from Montana. And I don't know if you guys watched that congressional hearing, but we can send you the link if it's still available and you'd like to listen in on it. It actually went, I think, pretty well for us. The Utah SHPO did a really good job representing, I think, all SHPO's perspectives on the importance of 106, and I don't think that the representative from the energy lobby did himself any favors because he didn't really answer questions very well. But that kind of tone and tenor of inquiry and criticism is becoming more and more prevalent. And just so for your situational awareness, there is, I fear, a real attack from all sides on historic preservation compliance, so like CRM work. We got it from the former chair of the advisory council with her trying to push through these program comments and the NHO exemption the way that she did. It's become apparent that it was her mission to kind of, in her mind, streamline the review process, not to free up everyone's time to focus on the most critical issues, but just to essentially create a reason to gut 106. I'm not a fan of hers, which probably wouldn't be the best thing to say in a meeting like this, but she's continuing to like voice and her opinion about how things should be. And I don't think that that will yield positive results for our industry if people continue to listen to her. So I am concerned about that.
Jessica, if I interrupt, what about the money aspect of the National Historic Preservation Act? Have there been threats to funding to the state program? Or?
I don't know that we're at any more or less risk than any other entity when it comes to that kind of thing. There still seems to be pretty strong bipartisan support for preservation. I think that the demolition of the East Wing has kind of, as tragic as that is and frustrating but not surprising as all of that has been, right? I mean, I think we all knew that it was coming. It would only take one motivated person to do that with exemptions in place like they have for Congress, the White House, and the Supreme Court building. But I think it's sort of motivated people to support. The concern isn't that the funding will be passed. I think the concern is that the funding will be released at this point. Because what happened last spring was that they froze the money. The money had been passed, the money had been approved by Congress, but the executive branch was refusing to pay out the grants. And then Hawaii and several other states sued. But then those states that were involved in the lawsuit were the only states that received the funding at first. I think they released it back up for anybody. So I'm not concerned with Congress reauthorizing the National Historic Preservation Fund. But I'm concerned with them releasing it. And there is a real-time example right now where Congress passed like $50 million for a special historic preservation fund for states that had experienced natural emergencies like us due to fire, flood, hurricane, whatever, or tornadoes. And we had applied for the money and we've heard crickets. And by now, that application period closed in June, I want to say early June, or maybe it was late June, early July, something like that. And usually we hear within a few months whether or not that they need additional information or kind of like what the timeline for the release is. And we have heard absolutely nothing. And so my fear is that, yes, Congress passed the money, but they're not actually going to distribute it. Like, nobody in Park Service is actually processing the application requests. So I think that's the concern.
It's happening in a lot of different things, you know, so it's not just district preservation. So that wouldn't be surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is, like, which some of you may have, if you're following it on LinkedIn or on social media or anything like that. Oh, now I'm forgetting the name of the, there's a national organization, like Cultural Heritage, something or other. They did formally file a lawsuit against the federal government for a project that was, from my understanding, going through some kind of pre-consultation or just discussion, not like a formal submittal for Section 106 consultation for painting the EEOB, which is not part of the White House, but it's a building that is like on the White House, or it, maybe it's technically not on the White House campus property, but it's directly next door, right? And it's this really historic, I'm forgetting the time period right now, but it's like French. It's got like a mansard roof. But anyway, sorry, words are escaping me today. But anyway, they were talking about, I guess the executive branch was talking about painting it white, and I believe it's a granite building or something like that.
Executive office building.
Yeah, 1870s.
Yeah, but it's like
Holland, I think, was the architect. It's Second Empire stuff.
Yeah, right. Second Empire. Yeah. And anyway, they're talking about painting it, and there's serious concern about what that will do to the building's integrity and the structural integrity of the stone and the
introducing a new maintenance problem, because once you paint it, you gotta keep painting it.
You can't unpaint stone.
Well, and then the treatment for it, like to remove it, would be like blasting the stone, and like that does damage, and just the application of paint to get it to stick may require them to blast off the finish layer of the stone, right? Yes. And roughen it up, and then that will impact the integrity of the stone. Like, there's all these different factors, and
that's too technical, but it is granite, and granite is actually one of the few stones that isn't much damaged by blasting, but
yeah.
it shouldn't be painted.
So
point taken that. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just talking about removing the polished exterior. And so that will lead the stone, regardless of whether it's soft stone or hard stone, to still be subject to potential staining, or even like the strongest stone, water can permeate, like if you allow it to, if you create a permeation.
Yeah, and freeze the hot cycle and all that stuff.
Yeah. And exactly. So those are, like, I think the major concerns that are identified in the lawsuit about why it needs to go through 106, so these things can be discussed and minimized or mitigated pursuant to 106, and that building is not exempt. So anyway, I think that everybody should pay attention to, like, what the rulings are onto it, because if the courts rule in the executive branch's favor on that, and on their ability to move forward with that without consultation, I think that it'll domino effect to all of 106. It'll essentially gut it without a repeal of NHPA. So just to keep that on your horizon is something that you should, you know, pay a little bit of attention to when you have time.
I hate to dwell on this too long, but is it actually subject to 106, or is it subject to two other levels? The Park Service has a separate review of things in Washington, and then there's the commission, right? The Washington Land Commission. They're the ones, I think, that review it, because it's government, federal government property in control of the executive. I actually don't think they're subject to 106 review.
Yeah, they are. The only buildings that aren't subject to 106 is the White House, the Congress building, right? The state capitol, or not the state capitol building, but the federal capitol building, and the Supreme Court. All the other buildings need to consult with some entity, whether it be a state TPO office, TPO offices, right? And then some agencies consult directly with ACHP. Like we used to consult with Fish and Wildlife Service over Midway Atoll, and then Midway essentially said, well, Hawaii isn't the appropriate entity, we're just going to consult directly with ACHP. And so now Midway Fish and Wildlife Service all goes through ACHP.
Okay. So, well, that's good to know. Thank you.
Yeah. But there is you're right, Bill. There is an addition to that. So federal buildings that are located like in DC generally, there's other different levels of consultation, including the capital plan. I can't remember the name of that.
Actually, the Capital Planning Commission, yeah, and right. then the Commission on Fine Arts, which is just disbanded actually, but
and then also the National Park Service
and the National Park Service
directly.
Anything
in DC specifically.
Yeah, and anything on the National Mall has specific controls over it too that are filtered through Park Service as well. So if somebody has a memorial or something that they want to put in place, it has to go up. If they get the approval to build it, it has to follow the regulations or the rules put in place by Park Service for all of that. So yeah. And that being said, like the other court case that is sort of like on no one's radar anymore, just in case you want to geek out, is the Standing Rock Sioux case against Army Corps of Engineers. That one was structured around compliance with the National Historic Preservation Act as well. And it flips in terms of its progress from administration to administration. And right now, it's essentially not been fully resolved. The last court ruling was essentially that, Army Corps of Engineers and the project proponent didn't comply with the spirit of 106 and complete their 106 consultation process, but they've been allowed to complete the construction and utilize the pipeline, even though they have still not, to my understanding, completed Section 106. So the courts are doing this weird thing where it's sort of like, well, yeah, you're supposed to do 106. You didn't do 106, but you can build it anyway. So there's precedent there already that still hasn't been fully resolved. Even though like the Supreme Court has given some direction on that case, I don't think that a final ruling has been made yet. It's just been like from the court or something like that. So just to, again, another thing to keep on in the left side of your brain or right side of the brain, wherever it just sits for a minute, like these are all domino pieces in play that depending on how they fall, we're in a strange time where historic preservation has a very uncertain future in the U.S. Anyway. Cool.
It's too bad. It used to be very bipartisan.
Yeah.
It used to be the Republicans really were the ones behind it. We have a new version of the Republicans now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, but I think that's about it. I think that's it. Oh, and then you may have noticed that a notice on our website that our office has been closed for the last month. We, like our physical office space, we should be reopening that not next week, but the week after Thanksgiving. We were just shut it down because we had to move everything out to make room for new cubicles to be built, to make room for new staff people coming on board. And so we're in the process of moving everything back in place, and it's safer to do that without an office full of people. So that notice will be going down in 2 weeks. No, 5 days. Sorry. So yeah, that's about
it. Then it's Thanksgiving, so it might as well be 2 weeks because...
Yeah. So, but I think that's it. That's probably all you guys want time to talk about, unless there's something you guys want to talk about, and then we can. It's fine. That's all I got, though.
Thank you, really, for your time.
Sure thing.
I want to compliment your staff, too. They're doing a great job for us, so thank you.
Thanks. Yeah.
We gotta twist somebody's arm to get some more people on the board.
Yeah, we have regular monthly meetings with the governor's office staff and what's Scott's last name? Today is not a day. My brain is not fully on board. But anyway, there's a group of folks in the governor's office that's been meeting with us monthly to talk about all sorts of things. And one of them is the IBCs and the review board. So we'll be pushing them to push boards and commissions to get the nominations through. We need to be putting out a social media burst to through DLNR asking people to apply, because I think with any board or commission, you know, the first step is just to let people know that there's vacancies and there's a need and then how to get on. So
also perhaps to get it out. We've had experience in the past. I've been on it long enough to remember. If people get appointed to the board that don't know what the board does, they basically become non-participating members. We've had that before. So it's somehow we got to recruit from the community of preservationists.
Yeah, and it would be good too to get some like neighbor island representation as well, because we haven't had that in a little while, and I think that I'm hoping to use the preservation plan consultation as a means of getting in touch with folks. And not that all of you guys aren't great, but it would be great to get some other career focuses like also on the board, so that we
had Alton for years as a sociologist from the, and I think he paid his own way over to come to meetings, didn't he?
Uh-huh. Did we?
Well, and obviously we need an archaeologist.
Uh-huh. Well, I think we used to pay for his tickets every so often, but I think that, yeah, that was touch and go there for a minute. But yeah, if you guys know of anyone, let me know. We can reach out.
Right.
But yeah, I'll be pushing the message out that we need more board members.
Be nice. Maybe I could talk to some people at the Department of Anthropology and see if there's anybody there that might be interested.
Yeah. Or Hawaiian Studies too. Like, I don't know if that's in the anthropology department or if it's its own department at UH.
It's its own department, but they don't really have. It would be nice to get someone from the Hawaiian community. We have Trish, but they wouldn't have an anthropologist, archaeologist, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we're also missing like ethnography. I think there was somebody for sociology on the list for like who can be on the board.
You know, so, like, yeah. Architecture, given the kind of stuff we have on our agendas too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're pretty architecture heavy.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, not that you're not really great at carrying all the weight here, Graham and Bill.
No pressure being the architects.
Yeah.
I'm not the only architect.
You're the only architect.
Oh, okay.
Usually there's only one architect on the board. But...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just think since so much of the subject matter that we end up, you know, having on the agenda is architecture.
Mm-hmm. I'd love another person to talk about cantilever versus... Hampton.
Oh, right. That would just extend our meetings, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, no, it's a cantilever. No, yeah. It's not.
It's not quite technically a dormer. It's a... Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Our history's not always been good on architects, though. We went to a Hawaiian architect, and they never came at all. So.
Yeah.
We thought we had two birds of one stone.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. No, totally. Yeah.
One interesting thing, though, like not to delay the meeting from closing, but I had a meeting with WAM on Big Island a few weeks ago, and Donovan Dela Cruz, some of you may know, I told him I would talk to you about him finishing his certificate program, because that came up in our conversation. Because I guess he's like one credit or one class or something away from completing historic preservation certificate at UH.
That's me. That would be me then.
Yeah.
I can work down the cock to me. I'll work something out.
Yeah. I told him that I would talk to you about how he needs to do that and like how we need to talk to you about like what he needs to do to get it done. But But he brought up, like, Shipti, and I, you know, it's hard to do this with, you know, just having Brianna and Mary working with the nomination program right now, but to do some more public outreach and advocacy on how to get properties listed. The entire WAM committee seemed super supportive of getting more properties listed and eligible for property tax reductions. And focusing primarily on residential for those purposes, and then also utilizing it as a tool for promoting economic development opportunities within commercial areas where the commercial properties are being underutilized, right? And then some of them are eligible for certain property tax reductions, like in Sedan County. But then I think that might also, they didn't say this, but I got the impression that if we build it, they might like build more opportunity zones for, say, a state historic preservation credit, improve that it would have a positive beneficial return, that they would be open to advocating for reauthorizing the state credit. So I think that they want to see us put some work in, and that's sort of the assignment that we've been given to work on this next year. So
that's interesting. You do know we just looked at a property that delisted that was a perfect candidate for commercial revitalization.
Yeah.
The Tongfat complex.
The owner didn't seem especially excited about that.
I think so. He just, the son maybe.
I think the son's
open. He's open mind. I think he's open to it.
Maybe they'll think about it in the future.
He said something about building a skyscraper, so I don't think it's zoned for skyscrapers, so we may have to.
It's in the TOD, or not, yeah, TOD district.
What is it?
Maybe. I think it is, right?
Yeah, because it was.
Is it in Evalay? I can't remember. Where was that property located?
It's in the park.
It's in Ala, right near the train station. Behind Tongfat, that one of the rare existing examples of one of those multi-unit commercial blocks that were kind of the building block of most of Hawaii.
Yeah. So HHF, I think it's HHFDC and the state have a plan. I don't know if it's out on the websites, but somebody shared a screenshot image of it, I think in a meeting once. But that whole area on some city and county planning plot is all planned for high density residential housing. All around Ala Park, because like they're rebuilding Mayor, right? They're going to tear all that down and then build it to be like 40 story buildings with high density affordable housing, right? Sure. With like commercial on the first floor on the street.
Podium tower.
That's interesting.
And so there, I believe, yeah, he's probably right. He's probably like, yeah, like my properties more valuable to tear down to turn into a tower because it follows the plan. So yeah, everything along Dillingham all the way up to Ala Park, I believe, is cited for high density mixed use residential.
That's because high rise public housing has been so successful elsewhere in the country.
It's the public space around it that's really successful. It's the landscape architecture.
The parking lot that they put on top of the landscape architecture.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Yeah.
Worked so well in New York. And St. Louis had a model project. Yeah,
everywhere. Those damn modernists.
Yeah. So. I mean, that just as a footnote is part of, and we're just belaboring this whole conversation, is part of the reason why everyone who's been consulting on the HeartRail project and the programmatic agreement that goes with that, there was a stipulation in there that was requiring HART to monitor demolitions within the TOD zone of the rail of historic properties that were being demoed within the TOD zone of the rail. And to try to work with the city to discourage people from tearing down historic properties, and that stipulation always kind of failed. And so we're working on a revised PA with city and, with not city and county, but with Hart, that essentially requires a memorandum of understanding between us and city and county, where those responsibilities are placed on city and county, and there's more strict requirements for adhering to the special district requirements, because the TOD zone, which you guys may already know this, but it allows for exemptions, like to special district restrictions, meaning that Chinatown's special district restriction caps the number of the height of new development within Chinatown to, like, I want to say like 40
feet. 40 feet, I think.
Yeah. TOD, because it's now in a TOD zone, would allow for, or at least the argument is there, that the special the special district restrictions are exempted because it's now in a TOD zone. And so we have people, project proponents, wanting to build hotel towers in Chinatown.
Yeah.
Right? And we're trying to argue with the city, saying that's absolutely inappropriate to give them that exemption because this is a historic district. And then, like, the property owners will point to some of the other buildings, like there is an affordable housing project there off of, like, what is that, Bethel and Hotel Street, right? And then there's a couple other
Marin Tower as well.
Yeah, which is kind of like on the edge, right, of the district, but it's still like those things are like should be treated as one-offs instead of like the example of like, oh, well, they were allowed to do it, so we should be allowed to do it.
Yeah. Right. They were at the edge, like you say, that they had a different set of rules. I think there was an incentive to allow them at that point to go higher at the edge. Don may be the folk memory on this, but I kind of think that they were granted additional.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're kind of trying to, like, get the city to agree to, through this MOA, as a requirement of the Hart PA, to actually enforce the height requirements. Because 40 feet is not nothing in a historic district where the majority of the buildings are two stories tall, right?
Right. Yeah.
They're probably maybe around the 20-foot range with, you know, the roof line and all that, maybe a little higher. But you're essentially being allowed to build at least a three-story building, right? In a district with mostly one- and two-story buildings, which is a gift, you know, in a district like Chinatown that is so historically significant. And now you want to not just double it, but like triple it or quadruple it? Like, that's insanity. So I told them that they could do whatever they wanted on the other side of Baratania. I was like, just as long as it's on the other side of Baratania, like, have at it. You guys have already kind of diminished the integrity of, like, what might have been a district over there on River Street, so, like, yeah.
But just, well, I'm just back from 2 weeks in England, where they really are interested in their history, so it's discouraging always.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I'll stop talking so you guys can get on with your business and your lives. But let me know if you have any questions about anything, okay? Yep.
Well, thank you. Thank you again.
Hi, Noon. Thank you, Jess.
Bye.
That's it, huh?
Sorry.
Well, I guess we have a motion to end the meeting.
I'll make a motion. We adjourn? Do we need a motion?
Yeah, we usually take a motion to end.
I'll second that.
Well, we can't vote because we don't have a quorum. So.
Oh, well, I guess we'll just have to
sit. We're here until Trish gets back.
3 months. Moving into the 14th.